Here we go. I'm just going to pin my video for a moment. Here we go. Okay, so thank you so much for joining us tonight. There are many people on here already on the Zoom, and there are many people on a conference call as well. The best way to reach out to me during the video itself to ask questions is by using the chat. So the chat button is here. I'm going to set it so that your questions are private, so that if you ask a question, automatically will only address me, and that makes it a little bit easier for people to ask questions, possibly. And again, I'm more than happy to take questions. If you're on the conference call and you want to chat, you can text me at 424-256-5134. I'll give you that number again. It's 424-256-5134. It's a different number than the number that I'm calling from. Make it a little bit easier for me to see it. It'll show up on my screen. And that's another way to ask me questions if you do have any questions. Okay. So appreciate anybody who's calling in to please mute your phone as well. That will certainly be helpful. I think most of you are already muted, which is fantastic, in case I may remind you every now and then. Okay, so let's begin. I have a number of introductions that I would like to make, which is, necessary. Tonight's talk has been advertised a few different places, mostly the same way. That would be very odd if we advertised it different ways. And perhaps as you saw on the screen a little bit earlier when I first, while we were waiting, the idea for tonight, it's a series. This is part three of a series. And what we're going for here is we're trying to create calm in a chaotic world. So this is called creating calm in a chaotic world. Part number three. If you missed part one and part two and you want to see it or listen to it, you know, definitely let me know. It's available at kehila.org, K-E-H-I-L-L-A. That's the novel way of spelling Kehila, and that's how our website is spelled. And you can go there under virus resources, and it's available there. So I have a few different introductions for tonight. Really, tonight we're speaking primarily about emotional health and how to be emotionally healthy in the world in which we live today. And that's certainly a challenge for us. So introduction number one is really a very simple introduction, which is kind of hashkafic on the one hand. Turn off the volume, please. Which is kind of hashkafic on the one hand. It's therapeutic. It's also very, very practical. And that is the environment at home, especially with kids. The environment in which we find ourselves, the environment of being at home. Obviously, it's our environment. It's critical to have simcha in the home, to have a home that's mali simcha, to have happiness and joy. It's beyond critical. It's a difference maker in terms of whether we'll be successful or, God forbid, the other way around. I was speaking to my Rebbe, to Rav Avraham Shmulevitz, who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, lives in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm very, very close to him. In a way, especially since my father's passing, he's my spiritual father, if you will. And he is, we're talking, you know, what's life like? And pretty much, he lives in Ezra Torah, Ezra Torah in Yerushalayim, and his life is very much like ours. You stay home, you go out to shop, and that's pretty much about it. And he says, like, what is it that we want from Hashem? We're asking Hashem. We want to go daven, we want to go learn, we want to go do chesed, and we can't do any of those things outside of our homes. And of course, that makes it very, very challenging, and especially, obviously, makes it challenging because we're home anyways. And then we were stuck at home. So really, it's two different attitudes. Are you stuck at home, or are you excited to be home? In our home, we try to create, engender the atmosphere where we're excited to be home, and we're not stuck at home. There's a very big difference between those two words. So the overarching goal is there needs to be simcha in the household. And I have to take time to acknowledge my feelings, but overall, there can't be a pall over the home. And the postgame, the halachic, the decision makers for the Jewish people, they've been very, very clear. And if you're paying attention, I'm sure you've heard this. And that is that even though normally Pesach, Passover, is a time for chumras, it's a time for stringency, it's a time to take on extra stringency in your life, which is probably, perhaps, the resource and the reason why it is that many people spring clean instead of chametz clean. they've been very, very vocal about making sure that this year for Pesach, it's just Pesach Klini, which means make sure you don't have chametz in the house. There's no mitzvah to take a toothpick and go into the corner of the molding on the floor between the molding on the wall to make sure that, God forbid, a crumb shouldn't get in there. I'm not saying you shouldn't have spring cleaning, but you shouldn't have any added stress in your home now on Erev Pesach, and that's really critical. Rabbi Kiva Eger, he wrote a letter, I believe it was in the 1810s, there was a cholera epidemic, I believe, and he wrote a letter to one of his students, and in his letter, he's commenting on how to be healthy. Among other things, he talks about which foods are okay to eat and which ones you should stay away from. He says you shouldn't overeat, you should have many small meals, you should have clean clothing, you should make sure to wash, anything that you and I would try to do. But he speaks about the emotions as well. He says, and I'll share this with you for a moment over here, just so you can see it for those of you that have that appreciation, if you will. If you take a look here, he says, Shelo lidog, don't worry. I'll underline it for you so you get a sense of what I'm saying here. Shelo lidog, he says, don't worry. You can't be in a state of worry. And to try to distance any sort of depression from oneself. So this is not a modern psychologist. This is Rabbi Kiva Eger writing in the early 1800s, one of the great sages of the last 200 years, of the last 300, 400 years even. Rabbi Kiva Eger is one of the most prolific writers and a great halachic posek decision maker for the Klal Yisrael, for the Jewish people. He lived on the Poland-Russia border, if I'm not mistaken. And he says that one of the key ingredients to being healthy, shalalidog. What does shalalidog mean? Don't worry. Ulaharchi kol minei atzvut. To distance yourself from any sort of depression. And that's pretty, I mean, it's fundamental. It's fundamental to being healthy. It's fundamental to what it is that we're going for over here. So that's really introduction number one. Introduction number one here is from my Rebbe, from Rebbe Kiva Eger, from modern science and technology and halacha and psychology. It's critical to make sure that we're happy in the home and that you have simcha in the home. That's critical. Now, it's hard to do, because what if it's not where you are emotionally? Okay, so it's not where you are emotionally, but it's what you need to be doing for your spouse. It's what you need to be doing for your kids. And here's a very critical line, and this is something that I've discussed with family members in the past. I don't mean this the wrong way, but it's something that we've talked about as an ideal. We can't let our moods determine our behaviors. You know, there are some people, if they're in a bad mood, then everybody has to suffer. Maybe you had a boss like that. Maybe you have a child like that. Maybe you have, God forbid, a spouse like that. If somebody's in a bad mood, so then everybody else has to suffer. Rachman Alitzan, that would not be very, very good. Just because someone else is in a bad mood, therefore I have to suffer, that's ridiculous. So many years ago, one of my siblings was in a bad mood. So my mother asked her, what's going on? She said, oh, I have a terrible headache. So my mother said, you have a terrible headache. Doesn't give you an excuse to be miserable to everybody else. If you need space, take your space. If you need to go to your room, so go to your room. If you, your spouse, your child is in a bad mood and it's getting to you, go take a walk. And take the space that you need. But just because you're, quote-unquote, in a bad mood doesn't give you a right to be miserable to everybody else. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say that your face should not be a bor b'rishut harabim. What's a bor b'rishut harabim? A bor is a pit. Rishut harabim is the public domain. It's a street. So in the Torah, you're not allowed to dig a bor, a pit, in rishut harabim, in the public domain, in the street. God forbid somebody should trip in and hurt themselves. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say that your face is that with which your face is accessible to everyone who sees you. So your face has to be pleasant, as I think it's Shammai says in Pirkei Avos. You should greet everybody, be savior panim yafot. You should be smiling, you should be happy, you should rejoice. At least fake it, even if you can't make it right away, but at least fake it till you make it. So that's all part of introduction number one, which is we're trying to create an environment of simcha. That doesn't mean that you should not acknowledge your feelings. Of course you need to acknowledge your feelings, and we're going to talk about it in depth tonight and how you do that. But you have to be aware, number one, that just because you're in a difficult place doesn't mean everybody else has to suffer. You want your kids to be relaxed. You want your kids to be happy. Make sure that they don't experience your stress as much as possible. And obviously, God willing, in a healthy marriage, a couple can support each other to make sure that doesn't happen. That's introduction number one. Again, if anybody has any questions, feel free to chat me. Chat me, I'm not sure if that's a verb, but you can use the chat room, which is available to you at the bottom of your screen. And as I mentioned before, the chat is private. Nobody's going to see it except for me. Introduction number two. For today's class, I was asked to address a number of topics, a large number of topics, actually. And one of the topics is intimacy and romance during Corona. Number two is, why aren't my children getting along? Although I think that last night's speaker addressed that in depth, so I probably will not be touching that tonight. Burnout. Number four, and number five, which I'll go into probably more in more depth, Passover and how to deal with it. Dealing with guilt of not being able to have the family over and parents being home alone. Number six, how to keep your kids entertained besides social media and the internet and tablets. Number seven, feeling like a failure. So probably number four, number five, and number seven, Passover, dealing with guilt, feeling like a failure, are the ones that I'll deal with the most. Obviously, there's a very wide-ranging grouping of topics. I probably won't get to all of them, but what I really want to do is talk about how we process our emotions. Because I think if we're processing our emotions properly, then all seven areas are going to, where I'll be in a much better place. So that's introduction number two. Introduction number three is, I want to offer a bit of perspective, if I may. Week number one, we experienced a brand new situation. And because it's a brand new situation and news is coming out and we're obsessed with following the news, and hopefully we've gotten past that point, it's the worst thing we can do for ourselves. Best thing we can do is shut off the television, not check the news constantly on our phone. And if we have to be in the car, don't turn on 1070. Like I said, it's the worst thing you can do for yourself, because it just induces and promotes and generates anxiety. So week number one, the first week, this was a new situation and there was anxiety about how are we going to manage? Oh my gosh, they canceled school. Oh my gosh, I can't go into work. Week number two, the reality of the new situation starts to set in. Our circumstances become clear. Maybe we've started to figure out where to shop, who does the shopping. I know that in my family, maybe I mentioned this last week, I have not been to Trader Joe's, I've not been to Ralph's, I'm not willing to wait online, but Sprouts is easy to get into and easy to get out of, and the grocery stores as well. You just have to go and it's quiet. And we've gotten used to washing our hands. We've got used to social distancing. Maybe in the coming weeks, we'll get used to wearing masks as well. So that was week two. Week three, now it's starting to get a little bit scarier. The Tehillim list has tens of names, hundreds of names, tens of names of people that we know. People are seriously ill. People in the ICU, two of my neighbors, both tzaddikim, both tremendous, really righteous people on respirators this past week. Unfortunately, one of them, you may have heard, Rabbi Morgan, passed away, and his funeral was yesterday. And the funeral came right down our block, right in front of our house. The hearse came right down and everybody came out of their houses maintaining social distancing. It was a horrible sight. It seared into my memory. I'll never forget it. And that was yesterday. I have brothers and sisters-in-law with the virus. And thank God they're managing. We have a cousin who's in the hospital. There's somebody in the shul whose dad is in the hospital. Thank God there's good news, which is that somebody in the shul's dad came home after being on a respirator at the ICU. So now I think the emotions are starting to get probably even more intense than they were. As much as week one, we had the anxiety of not knowing what's going to be. Week two of starting to, like, the reality setting in. But here we are in week three. We realize this is really for real. This is not just something happening someplace, somewhere else that they're talking about on the news. So before we talk about specific feelings or how to manage them, what I'd like to do is talk about some basic counseling or therapeutic skills. So now in my therapy practice, these are the kinds of things that I'll do with people. But you don't have to go to a therapist, though of course you can. And nowadays, most therapists are utilizing Zoom, this sort of platform. They're not comfortable meeting people in their offices, which makes a lot of sense. But these are many skills that you can do yourself to practice self-care. And there are also skills that you can use for your children as well. So we're going to talk about a few of them. We're going to talk about reflection, processing, validation, and normalizing, and then we'll go from there. If anybody wants to see my notes, I'm more than happy to share my notes after the class is over. So reflection. Reflection is something that we do for ourselves, and it's also something we can help our spouses or our children do as well, which is to reflect. It's to ask yourself, when you hear bad news or when you're in a trying situation, or when something comes up that maybe you weren't prepared for. So it's three questions to ask yourself. What feelings came up? What feelings were triggered by the experience? And you can obviously, if you're going to do this on your own, the best way to do this is write this down. You can journal it. What thoughts came to mind? Were they positive thoughts? Were they negative thoughts? Were they thoughts that were encouraging? Were they thoughts that were discouraging? Were they thoughts that brought you up or thoughts that brought you down? What was the quality of your thoughts? And when you're ready, and this is the toughest question, you know, what's your takeaway from it? The advantage of reflection is that instead of going through an experience and not processing it, is rather you go through an experience and that experience becomes transformative. It's not just something that you saw, that you read, that you heard, that you experienced or you felt. But rather, what is it? It becomes part of your experience, and you can grow from it as a person. Now, I don't know that anybody's ready for reflection on this entire experience yet, obviously not yet. But there's certainly the small things that come along. In order for us to deal with those emotions in the moment, reflection is going to be a critical piece of it. Okay. Processing. Why is it so important to reflect? Why is it so important to process? Now, when we talk about processing in a therapeutic relationship, generally the therapist is going to help the client process. But here, you may not have a therapist, or you might be at home, and you can do this with your spouse, and you can do this with each other. You could do this on your own. You don't necessarily need somebody else to help you do it. Processing is important. It's important to go through those steps. Why? Processing and reflection is a part of processing. A validation is a part of processing. We'll get to that in a moment. To work through it so it doesn't pile up. Because what happens when our emotions pile up? To process an emotion, which we'll talk a little bit later how to do that, but it's so important to do it. Why is it so important to do it? Because if you don't do it, it piles up. If it's something that someone else did to you, it breeds resentment. If it's something that just happens to you, then it becomes a trauma from which it's very, very difficult to recover. You know the expression, you know, that in our family, we don't talk about things, we just sweep things under the rug. Last week, I quoted Linda Lombardo, my supervisor in Catonsville, Maryland. She's a genius. She said, the problem with sweeping things under the rug is that many families, that's their approach to things. And when they sweep things under the rug, they sweep so much under the rug that it piles up so high that when you walk past, you trip over it. So processing is, what did it feel like? What did you think in that moment? Again, going back to reflection. There's a very, very important part of processing, and this is especially true, whether for yourself or for somebody else, but it's especially true when dealing with children, which is validation. What do I mean by validation? So we're familiar with the term validation. Validation means to validate someone. What does it mean to validate someone? Usually we think about it in the context of to validate their opinion. Oh, you have your opinion, I have my opinion, I validate your opinion. And as they say, oh, it's all good. But I think it's much, much deeper than that. I want to share just a brief anecdote with you from one of my school counseling experiences that happened many years ago. There was unfortunately a teacher who embarrassed a student in, it was a Rebbe actually, and unfortunately this such a thing could happen and does occasionally happen, and we hope not. But unfortunately the Rebbe embarrassed the child. And the child was very embarrassed, this very sensitive child. Rebbe, I'm sure he didn't intend to, probably had good intentions, but unfortunately he embarrassed the child. So the child came home, and he says to his mother, you know, Mom, Rebbe embarrassed me today, and I felt terrible. I just felt so embarrassed. It was awful. And the mother called me up to ask me, how do I process this with my son? What's the right thing to tell him in that moment? And so I said, you know, you have a number of options. Option number one, throw the Rebbe under the bus. Tell your child, that Rebbe, he doesn't belong in chinuch. That Rebbe has no business being in the classroom. That Rebbe, he's harmed hundreds of students over the years. He's teaching for 4 decades. All those karbanos, all those sacrifices, God forbid. Now, maybe that's a true statement. Is that what your child needs from you in that moment? I don't think so. In fact, I think that's more harmful than possibly, I don't want to say than anything else, but almost anything else. Why is that so harmful? It's harmful because what you're basically doing is you're destroying the relationship between the student and the Rebbe. You might argue it's anyway destroyed, but let's see if we can salvage it. You're destroying any sort of sense of respect for authority or for the Masorah, for the tradition that we have from Hashem, from Sinai, that we have a built-in transmission system. That's what Pesach is about. You don't want to take that away. If you criticize your rabbi, yes, I'm a rabbi of a shul, but if you criticize your rabbi or the rabbi's drasha to your children, you know what happens? You're basically telling your child, I don't believe in this religion. Now, that's a very stark one, black and white way to say it, but between the lines, that's more or less the message that you're sending to your children, which is not the message you want to send. It's the exact opposite message of Pesach. Okay, so option number two, the child comes home, he's insulted. Option number two is sympathy. What does sympathy look like? What does sympathy look like? 1 second, I'm getting a text or a message from somebody who's trying to join and having a hard time. So we will all be Bali Chesed. It looks like she got on because I saw her name here already. So maybe it's an old email. Okay. Shindy, maybe you could answer her question anyways. Ask her if she still needs help. Just ask her if she still needs help. Okay. Thanks. So option number two, your child comes home from school and he's embarrassed by the Rebbe. Option number two is sympathy. Oh, I feel so bad for you. That must have been so hard. That is so sad. Is that what your child needs from you in the moment? I dare say that any child who gets sympathy from a parent, they just feel worse about themselves. The last thing your child needs from you is sympathy. Option number three, validation. Oh, your Rebbe embarrassed you. You just mirror his words. You just repeat after him. The easiest way to validate is mirror. To mirror means to just repeat what the person says. It's the easiest skill in the world. As long as you're not thinking about what to say, but you're really listening to the person, best thing to do is just to mirror, which means you just repeat exactly what they said. And not everything they said, just the last few words of what they said. And they'll already feel validated because they know that you're really listening to them. And that's the key when it comes to validation. So validation is you felt embarrassed. Okay, so you felt really embarrassed in that moment. Tell me more about that. Now that sounds like, it's almost as bad as saying, how did that make you feel? No, when people are in the middle of sharing, they don't mind hearing that. That's my experience. Tell me more about that. It was so embarrassing because all my classmates were laughing at me. Wow, your classmates were laughing at you. Yeah, and it was just, I felt terrible. Right? You felt terrible. That's it. That's all your child needs from you. That's validation. You can validate your own feelings in a way, I think. Because when you suppress your feelings, you're not validating. So instead of suppressing your feelings, to acknowledge your feeling, that's already a level of validation. And I think that's certainly possible and critical. Here we have anxiety, we have sadness, and we're frightened. And these are real feelings. I know one of my children is especially anxious. And my mother-in-law asked my wife, so how's everyone doing? And she said, well, so-and-so is especially anxious. So my mother-in-law said, well, who wouldn't be especially anxious at this time? What's that called? That's called normalizing. What is normalizing? Just what it sounds like. It's usually a great relief for people to hear that. They think that they're abnormal. They think they have abnormal thoughts or feelings, or they're doing things which are abnormal. And then you tell them that, when you experience such and such a experience, or when you have a trigger like that, it's quite common to feel anxious. It's quite common to feel fearful. And many people struggle with the exact same things. Then it's just a great sense of relief for them because they don't feel like they're alone. There's a chazal like that. Chazal say, Tzaras rabim chati nechama, it's a medrash, which means that when everybody's suffering together, that's already a half of, it's somewhat of a relief. Okay, so people don't talk about it. Nobody's talking about their anxiety. Okay, maybe they are. Maybe no one's talking about feeling frightened. Maybe they are. Maybe people you're around are, exceedingly emotionally healthy and they have a very good emotional intelligence and they're comfortable speaking about their emotions, but most often that's not the case. So if that's true, so you have to know that you're not the only one who feels like the way you feel. There are many, many people who feel that way. And even though they can appear normal and well-adjusted, maybe they're just repressing their thoughts. Now, as a therapeutic tool, when you talk about normalization, it doesn't mean you're legitimizing a destructive way of being in the world, God forbid. So in other words, if somebody has, God forbid, they should have thoughts of hurting themselves. I had a client call me up recently and he said, things are so hard and this corona thing, and I just want to hurt myself. Okay, that's destructive. I'm not going to normalize that kind of a feeling. That's unique. That's hopefully different. But the thing is that by normalizing those feelings, which are relatively normal, but you look, even anxiety and being frightened, if you get stuck in them, it's also very unhealthy. So you have to process them, you have to work through them, and you have to be validated, et cetera, in order to do so. But if we can just, you know, reinforce the idea that uncomfortable thoughts don't make them freaks of nature, but rather they're human beings struggling to face and overcome existential and cultural challenges. That's the reality. The coronavirus is an existential challenge. It is. It brings up, you know, will we live through this? And that's something that is challenging. There's no question about it. So it's, what is normalization as a therapeutic skill? It's not just to bring you into the warm embrace, a comfortable womb of sameness, but rather it's a jumping off point for positive growth oriented differentiation. So you can say, okay, so I have some anxiety, I have some depression, I'm sad, I'm scared, whatever it might be. But the question becomes, what are better ways to deal with the conflict? What's a better way to deal with the reality? What's a better way to deal with the trigger? But ultimately, I want to react in a way that's going to support my growth and happiness as an individual. The key, of course, to all these things is self-awareness. And here I'm speaking more about yourself and obviously encouraging this in the people around us. What makes us human? What makes us a human being? Perhaps from a scientific perspective, it's our brains. It's the only part of our body that cannot withstand a transplant. If you give me a different brain, you make me into a different person. Our brains are the seat of our thought, our emotions, our feelings, our sensations. And these different parts of ourselves, the way we think, the way we feel, the way our body responds, are all rooted in our brain. Our brain cells, I'm going to give you a little bit of brain science. Don't lose me here. It's very, very simple. I shouldn't say it's very simple, but it's very quick. And I'm explaining to you at an elementary level because that's how I understand it. Our brain cells are called neurons. They connect with each other. These connections are called synapses. And there's an electrical connection between our neurons or our brain cells. And it's these that we experience as thoughts, as feelings, as emotions, as sensations. And our brain interprets what our body is experiencing. So self-awareness is a word or a concept that indicates a person has an awareness of what they're thinking, feeling, or sensing. Many people are not naturally tuned to their own self. They're not aware of their thoughts. They don't necessarily have the vocabulary to describe their feelings, and they have limited body awareness. So behaviorists, somebody mentioned to me that she's a behaviorist, someone on the call. Behavioral theorists, cognitive behavioral theorists and therapists, they believe that we can change the way we feel, which is our affect, if we change the way we think, which is our cognitions, which are our thoughts, and our behaviors. And so they view the brain as a system where a change in one makes an impact on the other. Let me show you a little graphic that I made for this that you may find helpful. It just has a visual. Here we go. So we have A, B, and C. A is our affect, our feelings. B is our behavior, the things that we do, our actions. C is our cognitions or our thoughts. Cognitive behavioral, so that's cognitive behavioral. Cognitive behavioral theorists and therapists, they believe that when you change your behavior, so then you can also change the way that you think about yourself, which will change the way that you feel about yourself, or you could change the way you think about yourself, which will then go ahead and change your behavior, which will change the way that you feel about yourself. That is CBT in a nutshell, cognitive behavioral therapy. And that's, of course, an oversimplification without a doubt. Without a doubt, that's an oversimplification. But it's helpful to explain in order for us to understand and appreciate what it is that we're going for over here with regard to self-awareness. We can become self-aware. We can become aware of our thoughts, of our feelings, and our sensations. And there are many ways of learning this. Now is not necessarily the time to do that. We can do an in-depth discussion about this. But you can ask yourself right now, what am I thinking? Probably you're thinking, oh, does he make any sense to me? Does he not make any sense to me? So obviously that would be a judgmental thinking, but it's critical thinking. Maybe you're thinking, as you see a picture of yourself or a picture of other people on the screen, maybe you're thinking, oh, that person looks a little odd. Or maybe that person looks very nice tonight. Or how come that person's not showing their video? You know, maybe your mind is wandering. Those are your thoughts. Become aware of what it is that you're thinking. What are you feeling right now? Do you have any anxiety? Do you have any stress? I know that right now, maybe because I'm speaking, I have a little bit of stress. And where is that feeling? It's a sensation. And it's in my chest, and I'm aware of it right now. And that's self-awareness. Emotions are varied. Emotions are varied. We have, obviously, different kinds of emotions. Now, one of my favorite quotes, and this is a Harry Potter quote. It's from Hermione to Ron, for those of you who are Harry Potter fans, is when he's remarking on the incredible... my daughter's sitting across the table from me, so I have a live audience here, and she's smiling because she knows exactly what I'm going to say. She says there's somebody who's crying and laughing, and things are, and she's confused. So she has confusion, and she's happy, and she's sad all at the same time. And one of the characters, Ron, doesn't understand how somebody can experience so many things at the same time. So Hermione says to Ron, just because you have the emotional capacity of a spoon doesn't mean it's not real. And the truth is that the Torah tells us this as well. The Torah tells us, "Vigilu bira'ada." You should rejoice in trembling. Rejoice in trembling. So one of my rabbeim, Rav Moshe Eisman, explained that when a child is on his father's shoulders on Simchas Torah and dancing, he's so happy. She's so thrilled to be on his shoulders and dancing with the music, not the music, but the people singing along. And at the same time, the child is also frightened a little bit because they're afraid to fall. Obviously, we as adults, we all know that we're capable of multiple emotions simultaneously. But and obviously people experience and feel differently with the same triggers. And people have chain reactions too. They start to feel one thing, but then the feelings intensify and they escalate. So becoming aware of your feelings allows you to transcend your usual reaction to stimuli. Engaging your thoughts to combat or accept your feelings is one approach. Another approach is being mindful, becoming aware of what you're feeling. There might be a place in your body where you experience a sensation, allowing you to process the emotion through the sensations in the body. I'll say that one more time, and I'll give you a good example. One approach is becoming mindful, which means becoming aware of your body. There might be a place in your body where you're experiencing a sensation, and you allow yourself to process the emotion through your sensations in the body. What do I mean by that? I know that for myself, if ever I, God forbid, say something to insult somebody or make someone uncomfortable, and it happens, and hopefully, I don't think it ever happens on purpose, but you say something you don't mean, such a thing could happen. I know for myself that when that happens, I tend to feel it in my stomach, a certain tightness in my stomach, just below my solar plexus, and I feel it down here, and I can be, you know, a few hours later, and I'll become aware that I have that sensation in my body. And what I'll do is I'll pay attention to the sensation, and then I'll ask myself, why do I feel like that? Why do I sense that? What is that? Where is that coming from? What's it rooted in? Oh, it's from the conversation I had, which was an uncomfortable conversation with somebody. That's where it comes from. Sometimes that's enough. Sometimes that's enough to deal with that sensation. Other times, I might have to call the person and apologize, maybe talk through it, process it with them, have a conversation, and then I can move past it. That's very, very different than sweeping under the rug. That's very, very different than ignoring it. That's very, very different than saying, oh, let bygones be bygones. No, that's dealing with the situation. Maybe I'm fully justified in the thing that I said or my behavior. And then I'll tell myself, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the conversation and the way that it went, and that's how it had to happen. I'll take a deep breath and I can move on. So far, really talking about theory. What I really want to talk about is getting into practice over here. So there's a great tool, which when it comes to identifying emotions, it's called, there's two different terms for it. It's the same thing. Some people call it name it to tame it. Some people call it taming the monster. You know, men, people in general, but men especially, and of course there are some men who are stronger in this area, and there's some women who are very weak in this area, so I'm stereotyping. But we men tend to have a poor working vocabulary for our emotions. Ask yourself, if you're male, how do you feel right now? Okay? I'm curious, or even if you're a female, okay, I'm curious, ask yourself, how do you feel right now? Do it into the chat. Do me a favor. Just in the chat for a moment, ask yourself how you feel right now. And tell me how you're feeling right now. As I told you before, it's private. Nobody's going to see it. So ask yourself, how do you feel right now? Okay? One person says that they're in pain. That might be a sensation. Okay? That might be a sensation. I'm not sure. Another person says stressed. One person says sleepy yet interested. Okay? Okay? Another person says curious. I had one person answer three different ways. That shows you already that we have different, we do have different ways of dealing with things. Some people say happy, some people say very happy. Good. When you ask your children, how do you feel? I bet you that they'll say good or bad. Why do they do that? Why do they say good or bad? I think it's very simple. I think they say good or bad because they don't have the emotional vocabulary that they need in order to tell you how they're really feeling. They're not sophisticated. Good. They don't have a sophisticated way of saying it. I want to show you a chart here if I can. I'm sharing my screen now with you. I should be able to drag this down. Give me a moment here. This is giving me some trouble here. Let's see if I can just drag it up. This is a cute little chart. I'm sorry that it's not allowing me to pull it down, that I have in my office. So here we have angry, annoyed, bored, cheerful, confused, excited, fearful, fed up, forgiving, glad, grumpy, happy, hateful, hurt, kind, lonely, love, mad, miserable, peaceful, pleased, sad, safe, scared, shy, sorry, surprised, thankful, unhappy, upset. So this is just an example of some feelings that people have. That's a cute little emotional chart that I use with kids to show them to give them an example of feelings. With adults, I might do it very differently. With adults, I might give them a list of feelings that they can choose from. The idea of having an emotional vocabulary is one that might be a new idea for you, and if it is, that's fun, that's wonderful. But why is it so important to have an emotional vocabulary? Why is that so critical? I think that it's critical simply because of this. If you can talk about how you feel, you can deal with your emotions. If you can talk about how you feel, you're already dealing with it a little bit. Let me go back to sharing my screen with you. I'll give you another example over here. This is something that I do with kids, but it's a good example. Okay, name it to tame it. Let me try again to just elongate this a little bit. Okay. So here I have a picture of a dog and of a horse. I don't know if you've ever tried to name, to tame a dog or to tame a horse. Here we go. If you've ever tried to tame a dog or to tame a horse. And when I do this with kids, I'll show them YouTube videos of somebody taming a dog and a YouTube video of somebody taming a horse. If you try to use the techniques on a horse for a dog, you're not going to get very far. You try to use the techniques for a dog on a horse, you're not going to get very far. If you don't know how you're feeling, you cannot deal with that emotion. You can't process the emotion. You have to be able to name your emotion in order to deal with the emotion. And if you misname it, the same problem is going to happen, which is that you're not really going to deal with the emotion on a deep level. Here's another picture that I use with kids. And here are some examples: frustration, overwhelm, confused, anger. Just to give them some ideas. And of course, anger is a base emotion. Anger has many, many levels of anger. So this is what we're going for. Name it to tame it is simply the concept, the idea, the challenge of know what you're feeling. Because if you know what you're feeling, then you can deal with those emotions and you can deal with your feelings. By the way, I want to say that bored is a legitimate feeling. Bored is a legitimate feeling. And perhaps your children are saying that they're bored. Maybe you're feeling bored. In our home, years ago, my wife came up with this idea. Again, a very practical idea. One of the things that we do for people that feel bored is we have a bored chart. Or we have a bored jar. And inside the jar, we have a bunch of popsicle sticks in the jar. And each one of the popsicle sticks, or tongue depressors, easier to write on a tongue depressor, says something to do for while you're bored. It might be to look for a new book on, you know, on the library catalog. It might, that sounds boring, right? But it depends on, you know, my kids would enjoy that. It might be to listen to an audiobook. It might be to reread Harry Potter. You see, there's a theme over here in my house. We do a lot of reading. But there's all kinds of activities that you can do, and you can brainstorm them when you're not bored. By the way, that's a great activity to do so that you're not bored, is what should we do when we're bored? And you can even Google it. I want to talk about Googling for a second, actually. My wife mentioned this to me tonight. I mentioned that Rabbi Morgan, our neighbor, unfortunately, very tragically passed away. And that's something that we did not share with my younger children. But as is unexpected, as is expected, I should say, one of my children's friends told her, oh, did you hear that Rabbi Morgan passed away? So, you know, obviously that's going to bring up questions. We better pay attention to that child in that moment when she's curious about it, because we don't want her anxiety to develop and get larger and bigger and scarier and get to a place where she can't handle it. So we're going to obviously spend one-on-one time talking to that child in that moment and obviously validating any concerns they have, but again, helping them process what it is that they're experiencing. And so, do you have any questions? So one of the questions my daughter asked was, can children get corona? So my wife did a very simple thing. She Googled it. Now, many of us, the way we would Google it would be how? With a child looking over our shoulder. Is that what you want to do in this situation? No way. What happens if the first result tells you yes? What if that's fake news? Well, thank God, my wife had the foresight to realize that that wouldn't be a good idea. So she sat down at the table. She pulled out her computer or her phone. She says, let me check. The first site that came up was CDC, and it basically asked the question, can children get corona? The answer was no. At that point, my wife showed my daughter the screen to show her so she can be reassured. So yeah, so if you're going to be Googling anything with your kids, make sure you know what you're going to see before you do it. Okay, so this brings us to more or less a close of what I wanted to talk about with regard to processing our emotions, dealing with our emotions, being able to name it, becoming more self-aware of what it is that we're thinking, what we're feeling. If we don't have a good vocabulary, we can always Google it so that we can become and maybe pick and choose what it is that we're thinking, that we're feeling. If you want to know how to become aware of your thoughts, you ask yourself, what am I thinking right now? And you can journal those, you can write them down. You could replace a thought. Okay. Obviously, all of this is part of a journey, and it takes a lot of work to do these sorts of things. There's no doubt about that. But these are some of the tools that we're using, in addition to normalizing, validation, reflection. These are all part of processing. And this is what we need to do with our emotions. So let's go back to our list for a moment. Let's go back to the list of items that I was asked to speak about tonight. And then maybe we'll take questions by the chat, or if you're on the conference call, you can unmute yourself. So intimacy and romance during corona. Why aren't my children getting along? Burnout, Passover, how to deal with it, dealing with guilt. Okay, a lot feeling like a failure. So let's go through them one by one. First, let's talk about the ones that are obviously more about feelings. Feeling like a failure. First of all, you aren't a failure. Who said you failed? Why? You're judging yourself that way. Now, am I denying your feeling right now by telling you you're not a failure? Maybe a little bit, okay? But what you have to do is, so I'm feeling like a failure. Now, you normalize it and say lots of people feel like a failure right now. But instead of allowing yourself, okay, so that doesn't mean you should get to acceptance of what you consider to be failure, but ask yourself, what can I do today to be different? That's resilience. We talked about resilience last week in depth. But again, the most important question, when you're feeling like a failure, to be resilient is simply this. What am I going to do next? Will that help me or will that harm me? And I talked about this in the first session. That's resilience. Will this help me or will this harm me? That's being resilient. Obviously, we could talk more in depth about this. So that's the two things I want to say about feeling like a failure. Number one, who said you failed? Maybe you're doing a great job. And I think you should question that feeling. Number two, be resilient and ask yourself, what do I need to do next to be more successful? Or maybe you can reframe the experience, say, you know what, yesterday I reacted 5 out of 5 times. Today I reacted 3 out of 5 times. That's already a measure of success. There are lots of ways of dealing with it. Dealing with how to keep kids entertained. Well, I gave one idea for that tonight in terms of make sure you have a boring list. A boring list of things to do when you're bored. And you just Google it. There's lots and lots of activities that you can do. I know in my family, we're doing a lot of painting. Just to give you a couple ideas of what we're doing, I ordered paint. My kids are quite artistic. I ordered acrylic paint on Amazon, as well as a bunch of canvases. And for the Dayenus, I'm not sure if they're going to do all the Dayenus. I think there are 15 Dayenus. So my daughter's not here, so I'm going to show you what she's working on right now. Okay? This is what she's working on right now. So this is going to be Hashem giving us Eretz Yisrael. Okay? This is going to be Hashem giving us Eretz Yisrael. It's obviously the Shiva Samin and the seven species of Israel. There's another one over there, pretty amazing, for Kriyas Yamsuf. And this is one of the things. These are how they are occupying themselves, so that they're not bored. We're looking. We're doing a family Haggadah, and we're organizing that on Canva, which is a very, very simple graphics site that's very, very easy to use. That's one thing that kids can do. Passover and how to deal with it. So that question is a little bit too vague. Already in the beginning of the class, I talked about how you don't want to have any chumras, you don't have any stringencies. You really want to be focused on what do you have to do. But obviously being organized is critical. I think, Natalie, if you're listening, maybe you want to have an organizer come on and talk about this, because I think that would be helpful for people. And I think that's a good idea, to have someone who's a really good organizer talk about how to be organized for Pesach, for Passover. If you go to the shul site, kehila.org, that's kehilla.org, I posted some resources on how to be organized for Pesach. Burnout, you have to do self-care. You have to realize when you're feeling like you've had enough and stop at that point and reach out to your spouse for your help. Reach out to your children for help. Maybe that's a good time for your kids to get screen time, and you shouldn't beat yourself up over the head and say, oh my God, my kids are getting scum on the screen. No. You have to be there. We have to be there for our children. We have to be healthy for them. So we need to be engaged in self-care. And again, you can Google self-care. Maybe we'll talk about it more in depth some other week. Intimacy and romance during Corona. So I want to touch on this one a little bit more deeply. In my mind, intimacy and romance is really quite simple. It's really about communication. To biblically know somebody, the Torah uses the term yediyah. What's yediyah? Yediyah is to know someone. Why does the Torah use the term yediyah to biblically know someone? Why is that the term? Why is that the term that's used to describe knowing someone or to be physically intimate? I think the answer is very simple, which is that, and I want to be very, very gentle and careful in how I say this. We have a young audience as well as an older audience on here. And I think it's for a very simple reason. And that is that yediyah, to know somebody, to be involved with somebody, to be intimate with somebody, means to know them. To know them means to have conversations, to have communication, to have healthy, deep, serious, loving connection and conversation. And that is the key to intimacy. Talking with each other is the key to intimacy. And so if you want to know how do you develop intimacy and romance during Corona, I don't think it's any different during Corona than any other time. I don't know why it would be different, but you have to take time for yourselves. You can go on walks together. You can schedule dates together. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You can schedule time for each other. And again, if that's when your kids need screen time, then so be it. This is critical to your own self-care and your own health. And that's what I wanted to share with you. There's much more to say about the topic, but we've been going now for almost an hour. If anybody has any questions, feel free to chat, to chime in on the chat. Feel free to let me know if you want to say something. I can unmute you. I'm happy to do that as well. If anybody who's part of the conference call, I have no idea how many people are on the conference call. There are many people on the conference call. Before, you're welcome to text me at 424-256-5134, or you can ask a question as well, as long as everyone's not asking at the same time. Okay, I'm going to read a couple of questions that I got in the chat. What's the difference between the feeling and the emotion? I think they're probably synonymous with each other. Just different people use different words to describe it. I don't know that it's a major difference. Is being bored a non-Jewish concept? I don't know if it's a non-Jewish concept. I think being bored is a reality. I don't think anybody's on the level where every free moment they're spending learning Torah or saying Tehillim or doing something like that, so they're never bored. I think let's be real. So is it, maybe it's not ideal. I don't think being bored is an ideal, but I think being bored is a reality. I don't know why people are feeling like failures right now during Corona. somebody said she's a little bit confused. Why do people feel like a failure? I'm not sure. The only question I got was, what should we do when we feel like a failure? So that's the question that I addressed. I thank you, Rosanna, for your comment about the great lecture tonight. This lecture will again be next week. Probably, though it's much closer to Pesach, so let's touch base before then. How do we handle the news, especially TV? Is it a way of validation? If you dodge the news, are you sweeping it under the table? No, I don't think so. I think you end up hearing about the news, whether you like it or not. I think that if you are so engaged, and I think that people don't turn off their TVs. It's like if they're on autopilot. They're not even thinking, should I have the TV on? Should I have the TV off? I think it's a terrible thing. I think having a TV on, if you want to watch something to like as a little escape because life is a little bit difficult or whatever it is, so give them to hate. But I don't think, I think you'll have, you're going to hear about the news no matter what. You're not dodging it. I don't think so at all. Yeah, my number is 424-256-5134. I will put it in the chat here and everybody will get it. And I'm happy for you to, anybody can text me a question at any time. I can't promise I'll answer immediately, but I will do my best. How do you prevent your parents from sitting in front of the news all day? Tell them it's not a good idea. Tell them, ask them if they want to be healthy. How about you get on the phone with them and have a conversation with them so that they're not watching the news? Have your kids get on the phone with them and have a conversation with them. Have, you know, there's a lot, and you can tell them what to talk about. If you're living with them, yeah, it's much more challenging. How about you turn off the news or say, hey, you know, there's a really, why don't you watch Thistle with them? You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do with them so they're not watching the news. Okay, there's a very important question here, which perhaps many of you are wondering, and so I'll read it to you. And I think it's the last question so far that's been asked, which is, can you please address how we shouldn't wallow in the sadness? I feel like it's more conducive to not acknowledge the sadness or anxiety till the coronavirus leaves and then it's over. I don't think that's real. I think we don't know how long this is going to go on. And I think you have to process your emotions as they come so you can be functional. Because if you don't process it, you're sweeping under the rug. If you sweep it under the rug, you're going to be lying in bed all day and you're not going to be very resilient. So I highly recommend I highly recommend against it. Can we do a class for kids to learn about emotions? Sure, absolutely. 100%. That will require a little bit more effort. But there, by the way, there are lots and lots of great books. If you're looking for recommendations, just text me that you can read books with your children. There's a fantastic author. I'll tell you her name. She doesn't have books about general emotions that I'm aware of, but she has very specific books and they're available on Amazon. And they're not expensive. Her name is Dawn Huebner. And you can go on Amazon and check out to see what her titles are. Because if your child is dealing with one of those emotions, if they're dealing with those particular emotions she writes about, she's fantastic and you can do it with your kids. If you're not sure how to do it with them, feel free to reach out to me. Why is it bad to sympathize with your kids when they tell you their feelings? Because then they feel bad. You don't want to make your child feel bad. You don't want to make your child feel like a nebuch. We have some Persians on here. Bat bacht. You don't want your child to feel that. It's not helpful. It's not healthy. It's not denial. It's not denial. You're validating their feeling. It's the opposite of denial. Sympathy is not the same thing as empathy. Empathy is to validate them, to mirror it, to so you know what they're feeling. All their child needs from you in that moment is your child needs to know that you know what they felt like. They don't need you to feel bad for them. Ask yourself, did anyone ever feel bad for you? Did you like it? Was it helpful?
I have a question.
Sure.
I heard a Rebbetzin say once that like if you're feeling sad or depressed, like you shouldn't wallow in your depression. Like there comes a point, like you should despair. And I mean, you shouldn't despair. You could like cry to Hashem and everything, but you shouldn't despair. So like, how do you find the balance? Like you're saying you should acknowledge your sadness. You should acknowledge your emotions, but it can get too far. And like, you have to come to a point where you aren't too sad, because also like the Shekhinah leaves when a person's too sad and like they're not happy.
So do me a favor, just repeat your question one more time. You're asking, on the one hand, and I want everyone to notice that I'm not going to answer a question unless I fully understand it. That's validating a question, okay? So you're asking I'll ask you to repeat it. Let me explain it as I heard it so far, and then you'll add to it. On the one hand, I'm saying that you should acknowledge it. On the other hand, Rebbetzin said that you shouldn't feel it too intensely, because then the Shekhinah will go away, God's presence will leave you, because you only have God's presence when you're happy. Can you add a little bit to that?
Yeah, that's right. And a person can't just always like be sad, because then they're not going to get their Yeshua, because they're not going to be like in a good place to like get it. Does that make sense?
Sure. So let's go backwards. I'm not suggesting you should be sad all the time. I'm suggesting that when you acknowledge and become aware of what you're feeling, then you can process it. By processing it and by validating it, it allows you to transcend the feeling. Maybe I wasn't so clear about that. I'm sorry if I wasn't.
So it's just going to go away if you acknowledge it?
Exactly. And it won't go away if you don't acknowledge it. I'm not saying it'll fully go away. You never know, right? You have to, there are lots of tools you can use to bring simcha into your life, of course. But if you don't acknowledge it, and then you're more likely to wallow in it. And I just want to point something out. You know, Elisha, where do we learn the idea that you have to be happy in order for the Shekhinah to be with you? That's the Malachim Beis from Elisha. What happened? The king of Israel was Oved Avodah Zarah. I can't remember his name right now. I think it's in Perek Hey or Vav of Malachim Beis. And Elisha was upset with him. And what did Elisha say? Because Elisha had to get Nevuah to find out whether or not what the Jewish people should do in order to beat the Moabite people and not die of thirst in the desert, in the Moab desert there. So he was so upset. He was feeling that emotion extremely intensely. So he couldn't have Nevuah. What do you see from that story? On the one hand, you see that when you feel the emotion very intensely, yeah, in that moment, you may not be so connected to Hashem, but you also see it's normal, it's human. So we're speaking about the human condition over here. It's human to feel things intensely and deeply. Some people feel things super intensely, super deeply, and too much so. And they don't know how to transcend it. They don't know how to get past it. So for them, you know, sometimes, you know, for them, processing is even more important. Validating the feeling is even more important. Acknowledging it is even more important, because those are the first steps to processing it. But once you have an awareness of what it is that you're feeling, so that allows you to, you know, then you can ask yourself, you know, how do I want to feel about it? Is this right? Is it wrong? Is this helpful? You know, that allows for, that's the first step. That self-awareness is the first step to being resilient. Does that help?
Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. If anybody else has any questions or comments, you're welcome to address them. I'm happy to take them either by chat, or you can just unmute yourself by pressing on the space bar, I think. Pretty sure you can do that by just pressing on the space bar. I want to unmute everybody, but you can unmute yourself just by pressing on the space bar. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take it. If you want explanation, elaboration of anything, I'm happy to help out. If anybody has any questions on the conference call, you're welcome to speak up as well. Otherwise, I wish you all a wonderful night. Thank you so much for joining me. It's really a pleasure to have you here. And
thank you, Rabbi.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Do I believe in putting a name to the emotion? I don't know if you're still on. Yeah, you're still on. Thank you, Simone. Do I believe that putting a name to an emotion requires speaking to another person? No, I don't think so. Not at all. You know, you don't need a therapist to be emotionally healthy. Even though obviously it would benefit my business. I don't think so. I think journaling, can be very healthy, can be very helpful. I think journaling, which is just to write down your feelings, you can use your phone, the notes section on your phone. There are lots of ways of journaling. So that's one definitely one way to do it. Thank you, Wendy. So that's definitely one way to do it. Anything else? My pleasure, Scott. For the person who wants to know how to get simcha, it's a good question. You know, ask yourself, when have you been happy in the past? What works for you? For some people, music is super healthy, happy. Music is super, super helpful. For other people, let me just think I know for myself, learning Torah brings me tremendous joy. Actually, giving a shiur like this gives me tremendous joy, even if it's about a difficult topic like this. Rosanna, just send me an email again to avistewart@gmail.com. I'm happy to send you my notes, okay? There are lots and lots of ways. You really have to ask yourself, when were you happiest in your life? And what were you doing? And who were you with? Where were you? Ask yourself those questions. See if that's a good start for you. And again, you're welcome to reach out to me. By the way, I'm not speaking CS. I don't know who you are, but I'm not speaking on people who are clinically depressed. I'm speaking about people who are, who are just sad in the moment because of, it's human to be sad in the moment. It's very, very human. If your clinical depression is a whole different kind of ballgame. And that is the way that your brain is wired, and you can rewire your brain through therapy and through medication. There are lots of ways. There are different kinds of things that you can do. Okay. If there's anybody else that has any questions, I'm happy to help you. Let's see. Oh, a very interesting question. Misinterpreting people. The best way to not interpret somebody, the best way to not misinterpret is by not interpreting. Now, if it's someone, your parents, somebody in your life, I'll tell you something amazing. When I started to give shiurim many years ago in Palo Alto, there was one lady in my class who, whenever I would talk, she would look so angry. And the first couple of times I saw that, it just threw me off. And then I realized she's just concentrating. She's just concentrating. That was her way of concentrating. And that's, like you said, you don't know what people are thinking. So you're asking, when someone else is not smart, what do you think if they don't have simcha? No. Okay, so good. You're aware of your thoughts. So now you can question your thoughts. Say, hey, do I know what they're thinking? Am I a Navi? Am I a prophet? Do I know what's really happening? No, I don't know. Maybe they're thinking something else. If you have that relationship, you can ask them, what are they thinking? Right? What are you thinking? And I think that's critical. CS, that's a personal question. You're welcome to call me to discuss it, because I don't really understand it, the question that you just asked, okay? Oh, distinction between clinical depression, normal case of the blues. Technically, if you look at DSM, which is the
Diagnostic Statistical Manual.
Thank you very much. So if you look at that, so it'll tell you, how long you have to be sad for, how many symptoms need to be in place over a period of time, things like that, as opposed to just, feeling, down one day because of whatever, circumstances, like you said, normal case of the blues. By the way, my first week, I mentioned Trevor Masood, I forget his last name. He wrote a great book called It Takes What It Takes. And he talks about how if you listen to the news all the time, and you just surround yourself with negativity, and you listen to country music, which is so negative, you're going to have more than the blues, and it'll make you feel terrible about yourself. That's just how do you avoid the blues? Yeah, you want to be careful what you expose yourself to, certainly. CS, I believe it's okay to ask people what they're thinking. If you have that relationship with them, you could say, you might say, if you're brave, you might say something like, you look upset. Are you upset? Because it just looks that way to me. If you are upset, let's talk about it, especially if you're upset with me, because I don't want you to be upset with me. Let's just deal with it, right? And if you're not upset, then just, what is going on? Are you concentrating? Are you tired? Like, what's happening? I know there's a vort about panim and panim, that your face reflects the inside. It's not so simple. Yeah, you can come back in. It's not so simple. I think that even though there's a vort like that, you want someone else to be happy, by the way. So then combine panim upon him. If you exude happiness, there's something called mirror neurons. This is neurology, but it's also Torah. If you bring me the crazy answer, okay. There are mirror neurons, so you can exude happiness and the other person will be happy as well. That's pretty powerful stuff too. I'm going to show you one more thing that my kids do so that they're not bored. So this is the painting they did, of Kriyas Yamsuf, which is part of the Dayenu.
Wow, that's really amazing. Yeah.
So like I said, during the next couple of weeks, until Pesach, and then we'll put them all on the wall with command strips, and by Dayenu, like, it just will change the whole Seder. They're not bored. They have plenty to do. Baruch Hashem. Okay, CS, why don't you call me and we'll have a conversation, because it's a different level of a conversation. Okay, I'm happy to do that with you though. Okay. Here's my number. You should copy and paste it so you have it. If you don't want to identify yourself, you don't need to. You can call yourself CS. Doesn't make any difference to me. Okay. All right, everybody. I wish you a good night.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Good night, and thanks for staying on. Really a pleasure to have everybody. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good night.
I don't know. I'm new at this.
Don't worry. I'll hang up for you in a moment, okay?
How do I do delete my picture? I don't know how to do that.
Oh, so the bottom left of your screen.